Losers.
If you don't mind, talk about that a little bit. The union comes up a little bit here, and to some people, it's kind of a weird topic. They either don't really want to talk about it, or I guess it's one of those polarizing type of a deals. But you said you were always chasing money, and you know, you joined out of necessity for, I guess, for some of those reasons. Anyway, why did you decide being a part of the union while living down there was necessary for you?
You know, at the time, I debated it, and I talked to a number of people about whether or not it was a smart move or not, because what I didn't want to do was, you know, join and then lose jobs because of it.
Sure.
So, yeah. It boiled down to this. Everyone was like, look, they're going to use you. If they're going to use you, they're going to use you. Union or not. If they want to use you, they're going to use you. If they want you, then they're going to hire you. And that was actually the case for about 80% of what I was doing at the time. It was, you know, I joined the union for a number of reasons. The main reason would be the rates, you know, were at the time were a little bit higher. And that money also goes towards my, you know, health and pension and I wanted, usually the union people were paid quicker because, and not always, but the union people were paid quicker because they were, you know, because you were working for people who work with the union all the time, advertising agencies and all that, mm-hmm. and all that other stuff. So they don't want to lose their standing with the union. So that's why I joined, and I wanted health insurance. My health insurance was a huge thing, because I was paying for my own health insurance at the time, and it was a lot of money, and it was going up. So now the premiums are much better.
So you get to New York then, and did you have to, or did maybe you already had it lined up? Did you find immediate representation, and by virtue of that, if you did,
I had representation before I moved there. I was with William Morris at the time, probably about a year or year and a half before I left. I booked I auditioned a couple times, and I booked a job with NBC to go to Athens and be their voice for the Olympics. That was like probably my first like really major ginormous gig, and my wife at the time and I were talking about moving to New York. So when this thing hit, we were like, let's do it. Moved to New York, but I knew that my agent wasn't going to cut it for me in New York on the commercial side of things. And so I had 1 year left with that deal, and I just waited that out. And in the meantime, I talked to a couple of friends about, you know, other agents. They hooked me up with theirs. So I had a meeting with the people at Buchwald and Nate Zeitz, who, you know, you and I share him as an agent, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Nate Zeitz used to be my agent at William Morris's assistant, and he left to start his own imaging thing over at CESD. So, right. I had a meeting with Buchwald, had a meeting with CESD, and I went with them, and I've been with them ever since. And I knew I made the right decision, like, the first week, because they had sent me to probably 8 to possibly 10 different casting directors that I didn't even know existed. So I knew that was the case with, you know, William Morris. I knew that he was more tied in with his celebrities and then the radio imaging thing. I wanted to really, you know, get into the commercial thing. So I signed with CESD and, you know, meeting all these casting directors that I'd never met before. And I was like, this is great. This is fantastic. You know? And then just started, I started booking. I started booking some national stuff and, you know, a few narration things here, promo things here. That's where we're at right now.
I'd like to know, so how long have you been in New York with CESD, really focusing on the commercial side?
Since 2005. I moved here in 2004, signed with them. It was a year later, so it was 2005.
Okay, so a number of years now.
Yeah, I've been with them for, 7 years. Is that correct math? I'm horrible. I love my agents. I know they love me.
Nice.
It's a great, I like it a lot. And I wish it was a little busier. Because ever since the economy took a crap, it's been up and down a little bit. But knock on wood, it's been all right.
Yeah, so I'm interested in that. I mean, I know, especially at least the way I understand it, when you focus on commercial side versus maybe certainly doing versus radio imaging work, but the swings can be very high and low. I guess you can have multiple national accounts going at one time, and then you might go a long distance without doing anything. Has that happened for you? Did you have to adjust to that? Have you learned to prepare yourself for the potential doldrums where nothing is booking for a period of time?
If you want me to be honest, what's really difficult is when you have something like a national car count, like I had at one point in time. And when that sucker goes away, you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
So I need, I'd love to have another, another national car account. That'd be great. But, it's going to fluctuate. And in some respects, I don't necessarily mind it. It can be nerve wracking at times. But I'm confident in what I do. And I know that, I just got to keep, plugging away. That's what this is all about. You got to keep plugging away, man.
Let's say you didn't live in New York. So you live in a different town, not LA or New York, can you have the career you have? Tell me your opinion on that, that if one wants to be successful and kind of get to that high level, can you be anywhere but New York or LA?
I think so. It depends. The unfortunate reality is that eventually, I'm not sure when, I'm hoping it doesn't happen, but I think it's going to happen. Eventually, everything's going to be non-union, because there's a lot of stuff that has gone non-union, and once... once people, producers and companies get a taste of that, it's like, hey, why should we go back? So, I actually had a former agent, someone who is an agent now, somewhere else who we were texting one day and she was like, a lot has gone on union. It's not coming back. So I know that's going to happen eventually, and maybe I don't know how long it's going to take, but...
Let me just jump in on that. So you are a union talent. This work that you may have had, maybe it was regular work, if they decide to go, quote-unquote, non-union, you cannot do that work. And while living in New York City, you'll never be able to do that work. Is that correct? Is that the way it works?
It depends. I could give you a quick little example of... something. Long story short, at an audition last week, and I hear this guy, I'm overhear this other guy talking to someone else about this one particular issue. Basically, he got hired to do a live announce kind of thing for some TV show, which was hosted by a very famous host whose name I will not mention, who obviously, because he is famous, he's definitely a union dude. So he most likely signed a contract with that show that was a union contract. Well, the producers came back to this person's agent and said, our lawyers have gone through it with a fine tooth comb, and we realize that we can do this non-union. So what was originally supposed to be a union job became a non-union job. And this guy lost out on that gig because of it. So there are things that we do, union people, than I do that are non-union. But that's simply because those areas are not under jurisdiction. Promo is one. Very few cable promo corporations or entertainment companies are use union. They don't pay union. They might be using talent who are union, but I'm not getting paid through the union. The only I know HBO is one, you know, cable company that does, you know, pay union, but the rest of them don't. You know,
so but you're so, talking so cable, not network, right?
Cable,
there's a big difference.
Cable, yeah, it's cable. Like, for example, to give you an example, you know, I do I started another season of the show on HGTV, narrating the show called Extreme Homes, and you know, I get paid X amount of dollars like per episode, but it's not a union job because it's just not covered. But if I were to do promos for Fox or any of the major networks, that's all union stuff. Because I have done stuff for Fox, I have done stuff for CBS, and you know, that's all union stuff because that's something that was established, you know, years ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just like, I didn't rattle through your credits in our interview, but it'll be on my site. But I mean, you have worked really in all facets of it at all levels. And I guess, you know, for me, this podcast is to learn. But the union, I mean, again, some people say negative, some people say very positive. It doesn't seem to be as restrictive, though, as I thought it would be. It seems like there aren't a lot of things that you are just completely blanketly removed from being able to do, for example.
Yeah, for example, for me and any other person, I can't do commercial stuff that's non-union. And the truth is, I probably could do stuff under the radar as long as it's not in a market where someone knows my voice and can be like, hey, I know that's non-union. And then they'll call the union and say, hey, so-and-so just did Joe Bob's Diner spot here in Arkansas. And he's and I know that's non-union and he's union. And then the union calls me up and says, hey, you can't do that. I could do that. I could slide it, in, you know, under the radar. But we're talking.
But it's not worth it. I'm assuming not worth it.
But we're talking like really, like, for example, one of the companies I used to work for in South Florida, about 2 or 3 years ago, called me and asked me, you know, Office Depot would like to use you, and should we mention names, or should I say major retailer, and you can cut it out.
I mean, I don't think it matters. It certainly doesn't matter to me.
I think we're okay.
I'm a little podcast.
I think we're okay.
I think you're fine.
So Office Depot, Office Depot would like to use you. And I'm like, oh, great. And they're like, yeah, but can you do it non-union? And I'm like, ugh. And I'm like, no, I can't do something that high profile non-union. Every person that knows my voice will be like, they'll know that it's non-union because chances are.
Let me ask you details about that. So you're, you know, first of all, Office Depot, major company, is hiring for national work, or is this for regional or local?
I would say it was probably national radio stuff. They never told me exactly.
And they still would use non-union talent, which is, I guess that's not so weird anymore.
Most of the retail stuff that you see that's being done by agencies outside of New York is non-union. Most of it, not all of it. Papa John's, the aforementioned Office Depot. Those are two pretty big, you know, companies and spots that I see, especially Papa John's. You see Papa John's all over the place, and they do all their voiceover stuff is non-union. But at the same time, they also have like Peyton Manning and stuff in their spots, and I know Peyton Manning's done enough TV. He's probably a SAG guy because he does a lot of TV commercials. So I don't know how they get away with it, but. You know, I can't do anything about it. You know, I can't go in there like, you can't do that because it's their business.
What I'm curious about, though, how do they get to you? You know, are they going through an agent you have outside of New York? Do you even have agents? Are you even represented outside New York? And How did they actually get to you in the first place?
Oh, well, that in that particular situation, it was somebody I'd worked with, you know, way back. So they knew me, and they just, you know, they must have presented a couple of demos.
Okay.
They must have presented a couple of demos to the people, and then people were like, "Let's use him," you know. And okay. So it was somebody. Gotcha. It was an old relationship. So I mean, you know.
Sure. So I guess, you know, it's a pickle that, and as you've already said, you know, you think things are going to go non-union completely at some point in time. And obviously there's a lot of people that are still very in favor of the union. But, you know, at a certain point, do you even really think about it? But, you know, the money you start to lose by not being able to do non-union work is going to at some point outweigh what you do in the union. Is this in the back of your mind?
Honestly, I don't think about it. Because it's kind of like going back to the thing earlier we talked about auditions. You think about that, you go crazy. You'll be like, oh my God, I might lose my house. No, I don't think about it. It's out of my control, to some degree. But I just don't think about it. I got way too many other things to, way too many other things to worry about. You know, I got to get my work done.
And you know, I don't talk to too many people, talents, you know, about this side. It's very interesting for people to hear about, to know about. You know, people want to attain a level of success, and you're definitely up there. And I think it's interesting to hear the, you know, truths about what you deal with when you get to that level. So I appreciate you talking about it.
Hey, no problem.
Now, what kind of time you got here? I've gotten so enamored in the business side of this thing. You still have a few minutes left. I want to pick your brain on some other
stuff. I'm good to go. I cleared out a lot of stuff here, so I knew just in case it went over, you know, I'd have time for it. So if you have some planned,
awesome.
If you have some planned questions.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk in two different areas for sure that are still in my notes here. What time do you have to kind of get into your studio? We'll talk about your studio in a minute, but what time do you have to sort of get into it in the morning? How long are you going throughout the day? Do you have days where you can step away? Do you have hours where you can step away?
Yeah, I do.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, I do. I don't have a crazy busy schedule. One of the reasons why I moved to New York was because I didn't want to be, not that there's anything wrong with it, because, you know, if you're doing a lot of work, it's great. I didn't want to be the person that's stuck in a studio all day. I wanted to, I've turned down work in the past that, I've turned down simply because it just doesn't work with my schedule, and my schedule is constantly evolving. I do have some regular sessions every week. But for the most part, my schedule changes all the time. And it can be hectic. Today was a busy day. I had to drop my children off at school. I had to come back here. Here's my morning. I had to bring my children to school from Brooklyn. They all go to school and live on the Upper West Side with their mother. Then I had to come back here, eat breakfast, shower. And then get to a studio to do an episode of Extreme Homes. So 10:30 to about 12:45-ish, I'm there doing that. I then leave, grab a quick bite to eat, and then go do a 2 o'clock billboard session for Lifetime. Then after that, I got a last minute booking to go to a company called In Demand and take care of some stuff there. And then I came back here, took care of some auditions for the West Coast, and some work for KDWB in Minneapolis. And
I don't think I knew you were the are you the voice of that station or one of
yeah,
them?
Yeah, I don't know if they have more than I think they have a woman. I don't know. I know that I'm, you know, on there. They signed me like a year ago, somewhere around there.
Yeah. Yeah, you had to be relatively new. Oh, congratulations. That's a solid station.
Oh, thank you. It is a great station, and the people there are great, and Diego, the guy who produces all that stuff. I'm in the middle of trying to refresh my radio demos, And I asked for all my stations to send me back some stuff, and the stuff that Diego sent back was just fantastic.
Now, Diego's amazing. I've conversed with him on email. I'm aware of him for sure, and I want to feature him on my podcast.
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, he's great.
Yeah, you should, because maybe I should tell him more often, Diego, you're good. yeah, I love doing that station, and it's a different beast for me for some reason. All my stations are different, but I don't know. There's something about that station that I just like doing.
If I can jump in real fast, how much of your work are you actually doing from your home studio? Because it sounds like today, for example, most of it was spent at other studios, and I could imagine a lot of the stuff you do is spent at other studios. So how much time do you work from home?
It's about 50-50, I would say.
So probably radio work and some commercials.
Radio work, auditions for West Coast, agent. I do these things for the DIY network. There are these little how-to videos. They're only like a minute long, and I do those here. Mm-hmm. I do those here. Back when I did the Wrangler TV spots, I did those from home as well. And the coolest thing about the Wrangler gig, which I had for like God a long time, like 6 years, the coolest thing about the Wrangler gig was. Not initially, not the first 2 years, but the last like 4 years of doing that campaign, in the middle of summer, gearing up for the fall, he would send me these like 3 scripts, demos, and be like, just record them and send them back. So basically the last 4 years of all the Wrangler commercials I ever did were all cut in my apartment, in my studio. I recorded it on my own, no one directing me, and then just uploaded A-files. And then they were on the air. And I'm like, that is the coolest gig ever. Because no one's on the phone being like, oh, can you do it a little faster? You know, it was this guy, Thatcher Adams, I think. God, I'm blanking. Why am I blanking on his name? From Toth in somewhere up in New England. I think in the Boston area or something like mm-hmm. that. Yeah, Thatcher Adams, great guy. It's one of the first. Actually, I don't know if he would know this, but he was one of the first people who hired me. Like after I moved here, I got hired for an industrial for Beretta Guns, and it was Thatcher Adams who hired me. And then he had me. Then he had me audition for Wrangler, and I got it. And I did it for years. And then he sends me an email one day saying, "Hey, listen, I'm sorry. I tried to fight for you, but." They want to change. And I was like,
it happens.
Yeah. You know, it happens. You know, it's like I had Lincoln, like I said, you know, I had Lincoln for about two and a half years, which was fantastic. But, you know, that went away. Every year they do the Lincoln holiday sales event or something like that. I forgot what that's called. That's one of the last things I did for them. And one of the other last things I did for them was re-record these 3 spots that were originally voiced by Willem Dafoe. And so I replaced Willem Dafoe on those spots. And
wow, not many people can say that.
Seriously. I guess they just didn't want to pay him. They were probably like, well, let's not pay Willem anymore. But they put me on it. That was cool. And that, you know, that was probably, that was a while. I mean, that was like, God, I haven't had that for like 3 years probably. Probably more longer than that. Yeah, actually longer than that. So, but it was a great gig. I loved it. It was fantastic.
Excellent.
It's a great gig.
Well, yeah, let's switch gears one more time and talk about some tech.
Sure.
Are you a big, you know, audiophile? You're a tech guy. I mean, you did production for a while. Are you into all that stuff?
I am. I'm not as much of a geek as I used to be because, you know, Berlin and I used to go kind of like back and forth every once in a while talking about this and that. And so I'm not as much of a geek as I used to be. I've said it on a mic chain that I've been using for probably about 4 years now. I'm not on it right now. What I'm going to give you is actually, believe it or not, an old Shure SM5B going into a Valley 400.
Oh, SM5.
Yeah, SM5B, the big pill mic, mm-hmm. and that's going into a Valley 400, an old Valley 400 that I've had here for years. I knew I didn't want to stand up in my booth for this interview because I didn't know how long I was going to go. So I set this system up so I could just, you know, relax and also be in front of Pro Tools just in case it, you know, crashes in the middle. So that's what you're hearing right now.
You've got some sort of a whisper room.
I have a little nook that I created here. The apartment is very, very quiet. I'm in a very quiet neighborhood. I'm in the back of a building. So it's very, very quiet. I'm in the 5 mile final path for LaGuardia. So, you know, the planes will cruise by, but if the windows are closed, you won't hear them. My booth is a little thing that I sort of concocted. It's not 100% dead. It's a little lively, but it's not lively to the point where engineers are like, what the fuck are you doing? Not one engineer has said anything negative about my mic chain. And I actually go looking for it too. I go, hey, well, how'd that sound? And they're like, oh, it sounds great. So I use a Bach 195, which I found, that's the microphone, a Bach 195. I found that a number of years ago because I was on this search for a microphone that sounded great right out of the box. You know, no EQ, mm-hmm. no EQ, because I was applying a little bit of EQ to my previous microphone. I wanted to be able to just plug this thing out, put it into my preamp, and then just like have it sound awesome and have it match, have it work for my voice, you know, have it really accurately produce, you know, my voice. And I found that, and I loved it, and I still love it. So I use that. I go through an old Daking 52270 mic pre equalizer, which is a great preamp, which mm-hmm. is a great preamp, and that goes through a distressor, which is ever so slightly hitting. But I love the distressors. I think they're amazing machines, and I do mix a little music every once in a while, so I use the distressors for that, and it's pretty cool. That's my mic chain. Going into Pro Tools, an old yep. version of Pro Tools, 7.3.1. I'm still on my dual 1.8 gig G5. I just haven't got around updating, and it's been working. And I actually just set up a new setup. I bought my very first PC ever, and a little Dell laptop, and a friend of mine hooked me up with a Samplitude, which is a multi-track, you know, digital audio workstation.
Yeah.
Yes. The studio that I go to when I go home to Syracuse to visit my parents, he uses it there. And I've always loved the way, you know, his tracks sound because he does a lot of music there. And I felt like learning something new. And I wanted to see if it sounded better than Pro Tools. So I'm slowly delving into Samplitude. So I set up in a little another nook here. I put my electronic drum kit and then my laptop and then a 27-inch monitor over there so I can, like, you know, mess around on Samplitude a little bit. One of these days I'm going to... One of these days I'm going to write a song.
You said you're a musician. So
yeah.
What do you play? What's your instrument?
I'm a guitar player. I've been playing since I was 12. I've got a couple of, I've been working on songs for years. I just never really finish all of them. There are two that I felt comfortable to actually put out there. And if you want to check those out, it's actually, how old is this? On a MySpace page. It's my...
Well, you know, it's still a good home for music, that's for sure. It's definitely a good music place.
It's myspace.com/Brian Cooney Music. There's two tracks up there. And those are two tracks that I was, you know, comfortable putting out because they were finished and done, you know. So if you want to check that out, you can check that out.
I'll put a link to that for sure. Hopefully I just wrote it down here, so I'll put it in a show notes page or bury it right into the, you know, put it right into the post. But yeah, I'll put a link to that. That's cool. I look forward to checking that out.
Yeah, I haven't written a good song in a while, but I'm always noodling, and I've got a bunch of different guitars, and I like to, you know, I like to. I have way too many guitars, actually. I just have way too many guitars. I've always wanted to have. I've always wanted to be a guitar collector, and I am. And now I'm like, you know what? I hardly play all of these things. So, but whatever.
Back to your voice chain. Do you put anything on inside Pro Tools, or do you simply use that to track and that's it?
No. I'll track it in and then, you know, export it and upload it. I have some settings on my SSL channel plugin that I use mostly for like really quiet reads, because what I want to do is bring the level up, but it also brings up a little bit of background, just, you know, just general things like air and general sounds. in your room. So I have a setting on one of my SSL plugins that gates very gently and inaudibly gates, and also compresses a little bit, and then, you know, jack up the output, jack up the level, actual level of it. So when they, you know, press play, it's like, you know, it's there. But for like radio stations and other stuff, I record it. Mic, distressor into Pro Tools, and then, you know, export and upload. One of my newer clients actually asked recently to have it filtered. So I did I sent them both. I recorded it regular, and then I duplicated it and did a little filter dealio on it and uploaded that. But no, it's all, I record, you know, what comes out of the output of the distressor and into Pro Tools. That's, you know, that's what you get.
Yeah, that's cool. I think it's the way to go. Well, right on, man.
It's funny, you know, you were, I was listening to the Anne DeWig, thing that you did, and you had asked her about, you know, advice for, you know, people who want to do this, and her answer was patience. And I couldn't agree more, because when I first started doing this, I was immediately like, you know, why aren't I doing more of this, how come I don't have more radio stations, how come, blah, 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 you know. And, you know, like she said, and it's 100% true, it takes time. I have goals that I have actually already sort of achieved, but I'm not done yet. And I know now that you have to, you know, even now you have to have patience. I think it's funny. It's kind of like when you emailed me and I said, I can't possibly imagine why anyone would want to hear what I have to say. When you say big time New York voice talent, I'm like, I kind of like back off from it, you know? And I'm like, yeah, whatever. But then I realized, you know, hey, you know, I mean, I don't mean to sound cocky, but, you know, I came here to accomplish something and I did it, but it took time and experience. The things that you learn doing this take time. The reason why it's possible for me to do what I do, run to studios and do two or three different, totally different projects, and then come back here and just change things up, it's because of experience. I've been doing it for a while. And you have to let that happen. You know what I mean? So that was probably my favorite part, except for that piece that you played, what was that piece? Oh, the piece where she's interviewing Tom Petty and Dave Matthews. I don't even know how old that interview is, but when you played that piece, I laughed my ass off. And then that part when she talked about that was like the most important part, man. I don't know her personally.
I think you went to my final question. I really appreciate hearing that. Because, you know, I do this, and I've been doing it just long enough to know, I think, finally, that patience is very much a virtue.
Oh, yeah.
Hearing it from you makes it, you know, all that much more important, I think.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
It's very true. And here's another thing. I still believe this. I'm not sure if it's true. But I still believe it. Anybody, whoever, like, emails me or tries to get in touch with me and needs help or, like, wants to know how to get into this business, I'm more than willing to help anyone, because I still hold on to this ideal that there's plenty of work out there for everyone. Mm-hmm. And what I do is completely different from what, say, you know, you do. What I do is completely, mm-hmm. completely different from what Anne does, because she's, you know, she's a female. What I do is completely different from what Corley does. You name it. Like, we all have our own little niche, and you know, it's, you know, there's plenty of work out there, man. It's just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on, man.
I think it's, you know, I love this business. I mean, well, I love what I do. The business is nuts. Sometimes I look at myself and I'm like, why am I doing this shit? But I can't think of anything else I'd rather do. I mean, really, honestly. I mean, other than maybe being a rock star or being a famous chef, I can't think of anything I'd rather do. Because I love what I do. And even when it gets hectic and my, you know, I'm running around like a chicken with its head cut off, I still love it. It's great. It's great. I just love it.
Well, you're in the right city for all of those things, so that's
it. Good. Helps, yeah. although I'd rather be in Los Angeles.
Oh well, there you go. Well, there you go. There's your goal then. If you want to have a goal,
I will be there someday because you know I was born and raised in the Northeast, and I'm tired of the cold, so, or the snow, or just,
I hear you. So I came to Texas for that reason. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. Hey, let's, you know, I, you know, that LA is my current long-term goal.
Well, Brian, man, appreciate it. I'll let you get back at it. Thank you so much for joining the podcast, and we'll talk to you again soon, man.
I appreciate it. Thanks. Thanks, Ryan.
I will take one more moment to say thanks to Brian Cooney. To be totally honest, I think it was just like a slow start in that interview. It was fine. Brian's great. He's just kind of a, you know, laid back dude. But I really felt like we got moving as we got into the middle there, into the 30th minute and beyond. I thought we really got the energy up and got moving, and I pulled a ton of great information out of him. And I do appreciate his candor. As I mentioned when I wrote the post for this podcast, I really do appreciate candor. You know, not everybody wants to talk about everything, and that's fine. I'm not here to, like, throw people under the bus or, you know, muckrake or something. But I do appreciate it when you get the interviewee who says, nope, there's literally nothing I don't want to talk about. I will talk about everything. Whatever you can bring up, I will discuss. So anyway, Brian was one of those people. Great guy. Just does tons of great work. You will hear him now as you watch television, and especially if you watch some of his channels. But in commercial work especially, you will hear him often. He's one of those voices. So again, thanks to Brian Cooney. And again, if you didn't hear part one, I'll say again, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, whatever it is you celebrate. I hope it's a good one. And then have a very safe new year. And I'll be coming back in 2014 with plenty more podcasts. One more mention, Joe Cipriano. I will do an interview with him in some capacity. Like I said, the holidays are getting crazy. I just don't have any time, you know, to spend with a big, long background of Sip. But that's all right. Sip has been interviewed many, many times. So if you want to get the whole story of Joe Cipriano is who I'm talking about, you can do that. But I'm going to talk to him about his new book and just a few of the many great things he has done with his career, as he has been everywhere. He's one of the top talents in the world. So anyway, that's coming up here, hopefully before January 1st, sometime here at the end of December. That will pop up on the podcast as well. Otherwise, that's all I have for now. Thank you so much for supporting this podcast, all the great emails I get, all the suggestions, all the support on social media and whatnot. Yeah, like I said, have a great 2014. Thanks. Bye.
This is The Producers. Have a question, comment, or concern? Email Ryan at ryanontheradio.com. The Producers. Thanks for listening.